This is KZSU Stanford, and from New Orleans, this is Jesse Moore. Jesse Moore from New Orleans, and he's sitting right next to me right now in the studio, and welcome to KZSU, Jesse Moore.
Hey, man, where you at?
Who dat?
Oh, man, my boys did all right, man. We're doing good. We're going to be fine this year.
Yeah, definitely. Jesse Moore, you're out here on a special kind of a tour, a house concert tour.
Yeah, man.
That's not a typical kind of a tour, and you're not playing clubs, you're playing house concerts.
Right, yeah, and it's very unusual for me because it's interesting to be playing to an audience where nobody's drunk.
Yeah.
Okay, nobody's falling off their stool.
Yeah.
Okay, nobody's throwing bottles around. Nobody's yelling out in the back, "Hey, man, what's happening? How you doing?" You know, people are just actually sitting there listening to my music. I love it.
Within feet of you.
Yeah.
Within inches,
yeah,
actually.
Right, yeah. They can actually reach out and touch me.
And there are kids there, too.
Yeah, yeah. I love this thing.
Jesse, you might be known out here in some quarters. I don't know that much about you. Why don't you introduce yourself to the radio audience?
Okay, born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. Traveled all over the world. Lived in places like Tokyo and Bangkok. Lived in Bangkok for 3.5 years.
Woohoo!
We're moving right along from there. I've been an actor and a musician my whole life. I did my first professional gig as a musician at 12 years old. I won the Apollo Talent Contest when I was 15.
Wow.
I moved down to New Orleans about 10 years ago. And I have been putting out CDs ever since. I've got 4 CDs that I put out there. I live in the New Orleans Musicians Village, which is something that Branford Marsalis and Harry Connick Jr. and Dave Matthews built and sold 84 houses inexpensively to musicians so that we would stay after Katrina because we were leaving in droves.
So you lived there before Katrina?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You said you moved there 10 years ago, so
yeah,
2001?
Yeah. 2002, yeah.
Moved into New Orleans,
yeah.
And that was the time just before Katrina had to be the just the real peak of everything that New Orleans was and could be, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it's doing really well now.
Is it?
Yeah, we had a rough time. It was actually a nightmare. You don't ever depend on your government, guys. I can tell you right now. We depended upon people, on the kindness of strangers. People came down there and helped us out and did an awful lot of wonderful things like helping to rebuild New Orleans, and but it was a very difficult time. But it's back, like you can't imagine, man. The music is rocking every night. 40, 50, 60 clubs with live music, all kinds of music. I know people think that you think of New Orleans, you think of jazz. No, there's rock, funk, heavy metal, reggae. There's all kinds of music in New Orleans.
Is there Latino music?
Yes, there is. There, Freddie Omar has a great band called Freddie Omar Con Su Bando. And there are a number of Latin bands, and they give, what they do is their gig maybe starts at 10 o'clock, at 9 o'clock they have salsa lessons.
Oh, there you go.
For the uninitiated,
Give the folks a feeler for that, because before Katrina, in every other big city in America, we have a Latin immigration situation, mm-hmm. where, Atlanta, mm-hmm. Cleveland, mm-hmm. Ohio, all through California, all through Texas, New Mexico. But that wasn't so in New Orleans, because it was just kind of, New Orleans was this unconnected kind of corner of the country.
Yeah.
And after Katrina, though, there were immigrants that were brought there by the government. Mm. The government did do some things down in New Orleans, right?
Yeah, a couple things.
And neighborhoods, whole neighborhoods got changed, right?
Yeah. Yeah, one of the things that happened that we owe the Latino community a great deal of gratitude for is that they are basically kind of the guys who did a lot of the hard work coming back right after Katrina, rebuilding it, rebuilding houses, working in construction. And, there's a certain kind of work ethic in the Latino community that is admired. Mm-hmm. By local contractors in New Orleans, I remember talking to a guy who said that, my guys usually they show up and the first thing they want to know is where's the coffee and when is the first break, and he said, man, with these Latino guys, man, I gotta like beg them to go take lunch, man. Come on, man, it's okay,
Really,
they're good, hardworking people, man.
Dude,
we own a lot in New Orleans, a lot.
So they've kind of changed the fabric of the city, huh?
Which is also very welcome because New Orleans is really just the northernmost Caribbean island,
There you go.
And we absorb that which comes to us, There's a great African influence there. There's a great, there's a great influence from Jamaica, from that whole region. But the Latino communities come in, and now we have just that whole presence that has just melted, become part of what New Orleans is, man. And we're happy.
Jesse Moore is the guest right now. He's from New Orleans. He's playing a house party, a house concert. You've been doing a series of them from Southern California all the way up to here, and you're doing your last one on the coast tonight in Menlo Park.
Right.
And we don't know how many seats are left. We'll ask the host who's here with you today in a little bit, but Why don't we play a little more music off another one of your CDs? The last CD we heard from was The Hoodoo Man from 2003. This is it's a self-release, huh?
Yeah.
This is great. Do you release all your CDs that way?
No, the last two CDs that I've had released is on a record label called Threadhead Records, which is an amazing new sort of model for recording companies, because what they do is they have a huge mailing list of people who are supporters of New Orleans music, and they announce a project. They say Jesse Moore wants to do a new album. People contribute or donate or invest money in the CD, and you get complete artistic license to do whatever you want to do musically. And then when you release it off the top, these investors get paid back.
Wow!
And then once they're paid back, it's all golden.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a wonderful model.
That's an inverted model from
exactly
what it used to be.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'll talk about your role in Treme.
Yeah,
you've
yeah
been on the series Treme on HBO, and one of the things they did in there was they created an album.
Yep.
Where the record company owner put up the money,
yeah,
just so he could get the right guys.
Yeah.
But they couldn't tell the chief, right?
Right.
We're here with Jesse Moore. What are we gonna listen to right now?
This is a CD off of something called Side by Side, the CD my next door neighbor Chip and I recorded and released the first album out of the New Orleans Musicians Village. And this is a song that I wrote called Baton Rouge Baby.
And who's your partner on this?
This is Chip Wilson, my next door neighbor.
Sweet, such a treat. She got long shiny hair and bells on her feet. She got a laugh in her eyes, love on her lips, skin like honey and a curve in her hips. The blues get to slip when she makes that trip, and my Baton Rouge baby come down to New Orleans. She got a heart of gold, sweet, sweet soul. Can't get enough of that rock and roll. She loved to dance all night till the morning light. Don't like to fuss, don't like to fight. My heart skips a beat when she hits my street. And my Baton Rouge baby come down to New Orleans. Night with a warm invite and says, honey, everything is gonna be alright. She tastes like cherry wine all of the time, fresh as a fruit straight off of the vine. I get a mile of smiles from them 81 miles when my Baton Rouge baby come down to New Orleans. Brings me grits in the morning, sweet tea at one. Says, sugar, hold the phone, we gonna have some fun. She loved me all day long, straight into the night. Ain't nothing wrong if it feels that right. I get a dip in my hip when she makes that trip. And my Baton Rouge baby come down to New Orleans. She keeps me cool in the summer, hot in the fall. I ain't rich, but she can have it all. She smells like honeydew, I swear it's true. Sweet southern mama right through and through. She puts a glide in my stride when she makes that ride. And my Baton Rouge baby come down to New Orleans.
Yeah, you right.
Yeah, you right. That's Jesse Moore from New Orleans, living in the New Orleans Musicians Village.
Yeah, it's nice.
I've seen it on TV, and that was a great thing, how those rich guys stood up and did something. You said they built 89 houses?
84 houses.
84
man.
Houses.
And sold them to us really cheaply and affordably, and You know, I bumped into Dave Matthews at Whole Foods in New Orleans. He's a true
Does he live there?
He probably has a place there. Oh, I mean, part-time. He's there a lot.
Is he?
But, you know, guys like that probably have 5-6 different houses.
Yeah,
over the planet,
sure.
You know,
sure.
he ain't hurting for dough. But I bumped into him, man, and I talked to him, and I told him, man, you know, because he put up $1.5 million as a matching grant to his fans. He said, if you guys put up $1.5 million, I'll put up $1.5 million.
Wow.
I'll match it. And they came up with $1 million.
The fans did.
The fans did. $3 million, man. And I told him, hey, man, you know, you changed my life, man. You made it possible for me to do what I do here in New Orleans. And he had tears in his eyes. He's a nice dude.
Wow.
Very nice dude. Very nice dude.
You know, guys like that probably hunt for ways to give back.
I know.
And they're so disconnected from their audience because when he goes and plays, he's on a 20-foot stage.
Yeah.
And he can't go out there to tear his clothes off.
Yeah.
You know, he's got handlers and bodyguards.
But he comes to New Orleans, he can walk into a club and jam with us, man, and it's okay.
Wow.
You'd be surprised who comes and jams in New Orleans, man. Stevie Wonder, you know.
Really?
All kinds of people. Yeah, New Orleans is
Wow.
It's the last bohemia, man. It's the last place where you can play music or be an artist of any sort whatsoever, and you know there's no shocking anybody. You know, I mean, you can't shock anybody in New Orleans. I mean, we've seen it all, man. We have seen it all. It's decadent city, man.
You know, you said you lived all over the world. Did you feel, even though the hardship that you had to go through to endure the post Katrina time? Do you feel fortunate that you had a chance to be part of that scene before Katrina and now you get to live there after?
Yeah. The thing about New Orleans is you don't just live there. You love New Orleans. You know, there's no city in the world that's had as many songs written about it as New Orleans. New Orleans is a deep, deep love. And it's like Louis Armstrong said, you know what it means to miss New Orleans. When you're out of there, you want to be back, you know?
Yeah.
And it's good to get out every once in a while just to remind yourself, you know, because sometimes it's a little difficult. It's an old Mediterranean city. So it's not part of the United States, man. I don't know how else to explain it. It's a very it takes its ritual very seriously, man.
Yeah.
People were freaked out when we said that we were going to do Mardi Gras after Katrina. Hey, man, there's no such thing as Mardi Gras not happening, man. We have to celebrate the soul, man.
Yeah,
we've got a major jazz funeral that's going to happen when I get back. Wardell Kieserke, who is one of the people who was like in the fabric of
New Orleans. We know about him up here.
Right.
He died?
Yeah, he died. And, you know, when we have a jazz funeral, that's not just TV stuff, man. I mean, you know, you start off with, you know, A Closer Walk with Thee and everybody's in tears, and then you break out in a second line, man, and you celebrate this person's life.
With a guy that big.
Oh, man.
Is he going to be in a hall? It's probably going to be outdoors,
oh,
right?
I'm not exactly sure how they're going to do it.
Superdome or something for a guy
it's
like that, right?
Be, yeah, it's going to be big.
Yeah.
WOZ, the radio station there, decided to play for the day only songs that he has in some way touched, like either he's produced it, he's arranged it, he's played on it, or whatever. The whole day.
Wow.
24 hours.
Is that coming up, or they already did it?
They already did it.
Oh,
man. And they had more material after it was over.
Wow. Jesse Moore, working musician from New Orleans. Let's talk a little bit about Tremé. Now, for folks who don't know, Tremé is a series on HBO. Some concerned folks decided to put the money up and produce a TV show taking place. It's just completed its second season, just aired its second season. And it sets itself 6 months, the first season, 6 months after Katrina.
Yeah.
And when the town was in total turmoil and everything. And then 1 year, the second season is basically 1 year after.
Yeah.
And there's about six principal characters, a restaurateur and a professor and musicians, of course. Steve Earle made a cameo appearance. He was in the entire second season,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he was.
Speak about your role and how Tremé affected the city.
Well, first of all, it's being produced by some guys with some serious integrity and some serious skins on the wall. I mean, when you talk about David Simon and Eric Overmyer, you're talking about The Wire. You're talking about, you know, some of the best TV that was ever made.
Uh-huh.
And HBO got behind it and brought the series to New Orleans, which, is, by the way, is the third busiest filming location in the country now. New York, L.A., New Orleans.
Wow.
A lot of TV and film is shot there. I just finished an episode of Memphis Beat. And when I get back, I'm doing a TNT movie, a movie for TNT. And I was asked, you know, I did, went through the audition process just like every other actor, and they gave me a shot on the first season that wound up getting cut out. But then what they did, because they felt bad about it, which is unusual.
In Hollywood.
You know, we really wanted to use you, Jesse. So what they did was they put me on something called the Loop Group. Now, the Loop Group is a group of actors that goes into a recording studio once a week, and we create the ambient sounds. Because when they go into a bar, two guys talking to each other, you can get that sound, but you can't get the sound of the room.
So they're not using the actual sound of the room.
No.
That's the loop group is...
That's
all that us. Background sound we hear?
That's us.
Interesting. Yeah. So you're watching the film.
Right. And they're saying, you know, hey, you know, see that guy? When he tips his head back, he's laughing. Give me a laugh, Jesse. You know? That kind of
stuff.
So the Loop Group is, you know, we also get to see every episode before everybody else does.
Oh, wow.
Because we get to watch the
And I bet they swear you to secrecy, too,
oh,
huh?
Man, you have never seen so many agreements that you have to sign. They are serious about that. And when you do the show itself, because this season, the second season, I did a part as a water inspector, as a city inspector, who comes in and harasses the chief about putting in his own toilet.
And you don't mean the chief of police, you mean the...
Yeah, the big chief.
The big chief,
Clark Peterson, his role. And, you know, I came in and did that, and now every time I see musicians on the street, man, I ask them if they pay their water bill. I'm not cut off their water. But, yeah, you know, they gave me a shot for on camera, and, you know, I'm fine with that. I love the Loop Group. It's a bunch of fun guys.
Well, that's steady work, too, right?
It's very
That's like a steady paycheck, because you got to do that every week.
Yeah, and you get paid for a full day on camera, even if you're only in there for 2 or 3 hours.
Really?
Yeah, and you go in, you don't have to be all dolled up or anything. You don't have to go through makeup. You don't have to go through the wardrobe. You just walk in and make the sounds that they ask you to make and leave with a check.
So besides being a touring musician, you're a full actor too.
Oh
huh?
yeah, I've been for a long time. I was part of the San Francisco Mime Troupe here in New Orleans, and where are we? San Francisco, right? we love you, Albuquerque.
When were you part of the Mime Troupe?
83 through 88, I guess it was 89. I was a collective member. I was part of the group when we got the Tony Award.
Wow.
Yeah.
You have been around.
Oh yeah.
Jesse Morey's playing a house party in Menlo Park tonight, and a house concert. You might be lucky enough to get a seat there. We're going to give you a phone number and a name. You'll have to call. These aren't tickets we're giving away, although there will be a cover charge. And again, we're not going to be giving tickets away. We'll give a phone number away at the end of the interview, and you can call that phone number and find out how you might be able to get in. It's almost sold out now, and Jesse's frantically looking for some. There you go. Yeah, put that in.
Hey, man, I'm doing the DJ thing too, man.
Yeah,
check this
out, nice,
man.
A DJ. Just like down at OZ.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. WWOZ. We're about to. Okay, number. Track number. What are we going to put on here? We're going to do a song from my first CD. And this is called.
Dial it up to the number.
I have to dial it up. It's not that easy, this DJ thing. Up here, right? Okay. Okay, number 7 there.
Jesse Morey, he'll be in Menlo Park tonight for the house concert. We will give a phone number, and you might possibly be able to get in, get you a seat. There's a nominal cover charge. It pays the musician, and that's how these house concerts work. What are we going to listen to, Jesse?
We're going to listen to a song that I wrote about the reason that I moved to New Orleans, meeting a voodoo priestess there who told me, she said, you know, Jesse, you need to move here to New Orleans. New Orleans needs a little more light.
What happened next? wasn't part of the plan. Walked up on a smile, knowing warm and sweet. And she said, uh-uh, baby, what you're looking for is everywhere. Condo Square, sweet scent of magic is in the air. Condo Square. Hey, hey, hey. So I ambled on down to Condo Square. I got the story there. Saw spirits wailing in the night. I heard voodoo rhythms till the morning light. I felt the fires scorch me like a prayer. Sweet deliverance in New Orleans. Count it, Congo Square. Congo Square. Paid my respects to the long gone but still here. Circle round to the temple of no fear. And the conjure woman smiled when she opened up the door. Blessed me with the which and the why and the what for. She prayed for peace, sang of mysteries. I heard the whispers of my histories. Got me a mojo, made my lions roar. Some of that greed I've been looking for. I felt inspired, left without a care. Sweet deliverance in New Orleans. Everywhere, Congo Square, sweet scent of magic is in the air. Congo Square, yeah.
Jesse Moore with the band. Tonight he'll be solo. This whole concerts, house concert series he's doing has been that way. Jesse Moore, working musician, working actor, living in New Orleans since 2002, lived through Katrina, got out, made it back in the studios with us today. We'll give you a phone number. You can call and possibly get on the list for a seat tonight in Menlo Park at this house concert. What record was that from? You've got five CDs sitting in front of
that
us.
That was from The Hoodoo Man.
That was your first one?
Yeah, that was my first solo CD.
Now, had you made records before you went to New Orleans?
Well, yeah, but I had been a part of other bands and stuff like that. And
never under your own name?
No. Mostly I was an actor, actually. In 99, I stopped acting. I just got sick of it. I was doing a lot of stuff in New York. I had, you know, all the Law and Orders and all that kind of stuff, the soaps and stuff, and I just got tired of it, and I had bought a house up in Woodstock and moved up there for a while and told my lady, you know, she was in the same head situation as me, so I said, let's just take 6 months off, figure out what we want to do. And she decided to create an animal sanctuary, which I'm the co-founder of, Catskill Animal Sanctuary, It rescues abused and abandoned horses and farm animals on 77 acres, and you know, we had 277 animals when I left. Oh. And I built a little studio on my property and started writing music and recording it, and it came out, you know, it's New Orleans music, man. And I said, baby, I'm sorry, I'm tired of shoving on horse poop. I gotta go meet my future here in New Orleans. And I went down to New Orleans, man, and I hit the ground running. I mean, I was very fortunate. Right away, things started happening for me, and because I met my buddy Coco Robichaud, who
he's in Treme. Not a lot of people outside New Orleans know about him. He's a fixture.
He is as Dr. John says, he is a chiropractor.
Yeah, yeah. He really he's almost cut from the Dr. John kind of mold, isn't he?
Yeah,
they could be brothers.
Yeah, yeah. Hey Jesse, hey man, you like the herb? You like the herb, man? Come on, man, let's go take a ride, man. Come on. That's him, you know.
He plays guitar and sings. He's a recording artist.
Yeah, he's a great artist.
But he's a lot more than that.
He's a real hoodoo man. I mean, he's a real traiteur. His grandmother was a traiteur.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He said, hey, you know, Jesse, hey, man, my grandmama, she's daddy's little black hand, see? And she used to bring the hand over to me. She said, when I was a little boy, she said, hey, you go over there and you let the hen peck across the road right there. See if anybody come across. Nobody's going to cross that line. You watch. And yeah, nobody crossed that line, man. The whole day I've been sitting there watching, man.
Is he Creole?
He's actually part Choctaw Indian.
And what's the other part? Who knows, huh?
It's a little gumbo there.
That's how it is down there, though, too.
I think it's a little gumbo happening there, man.
There's a little bit of everybody and everybody.
I saw him just a few days before I left, man. I gave him a hug, man. That dude, he can't weigh more than 89 pounds soaking wet, man.
Wow.
And there's a lot of music that comes out of that little body, man.
Yeah, definitely. He's still playing regular.
Still playing regular, man. Coco will be playing, you know, Coco will be playing 20 years after he's dead, man. I'm telling you. He'll find a way.
Jesse Moore is a guest now, visiting, right now, touring musician, but also actor, was on Treme. And then you said you're getting ready to do a movie for
TNT called Hyde. And, you know, New Orleans, like, as I mentioned earlier, New Orleans is the third busiest filming location in the country now.
So they're going to film this new movie in New Orleans?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The day after I get back.
I'm
right in it. You know, I got to go to wardrobe that evening.
Wow. So you've been studying script.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You got to. That's months before, right?
Yeah.
You got all your lines down?
Oh, yeah, I got it down. I'm ready, man. I'm ready. I'm at the gates, man.
Now, what about tonight, Menlo Park?
Tonight, you know, is an interesting thing, that's a phenomenon that's been happening with this touring, is that people want... See, I'm used to playing for like 2 hours. You know, and then taking a little break and then playing for longer. But here I've been playing shorter sets, and I thought I was talking too much. You know, I mean, I would be asking my hosts, you know, should I just shut up and play? And the audiences were saying, no, we want to hear more of your stories. We want to hear more about New Orleans. You know, we want to know more about your life. And so I've been talking almost as much as I've been playing, man. I've been having a good time doing it. I got a lot of stories, man.
And when you're sitting in somebody's living room, it's a lot easier to get in a conversation like that, right?
Yes, it
than
is.
In some club.
Yeah, yeah. I can actually just say, you know, anybody got any questions? And we're in a conversation, man.
Definitely. Now, you said you started in Southern California. How did this whole thing come about for you? Did you plan this? Did you make phone calls? Did somebody approach you? Because this is very different.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
a different kind of a tour,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. What I did was I wanted to visit my friends who had come to visit me in New Orleans, and Barry and Maya, who I'm doing the show at there tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, you know, why don't I just come out there and do a house party or two, and you know, that'll pay for my trip out there, and at least I can take a little vacation, because I work nonstop in New Orleans. And they said, sure. And then I made a couple other calls, and the head of Threadhead Records set one up for L.A. I've got another friend, this guy Chris Payne, who did a movie called Who Killed the Electric Car.
Oh, yeah, we know that movie.
Yeah, he's
sure.
my buddy. He, and, you know, there are these... It's mostly friends, man. Mm-hmm. I just and people on my email list. I contact them and say, you know, I'm thinking of coming out in your area. What you got? And they set up house concerts for me, man.
How many have you done on the coast here now?
This is now my fourth, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
And nice little vacation, huh?
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, I play on the weekends, and the rest of the time I'm sitting around, you know, just playing music and kicking back and going for walks in the hills and stuff. You know.
Did you have a chance to go see some of your friends in the mime troupe?
Yes, I did. I saw their latest show, and it was great.
In Palo Alto?
I saw it in Palo Alto.
I was going to go, and I missed it just 2 weeks ago,
man,
right?
It was great.
Was it?
I was very proud of them. I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen the mime troupe.
Mm-hmm.
I was in it from 83 to 88, and, you know, it's a collective, and it's a very tightly knit group. And it was great to see that it has grown, that they just haven't been managing the status quo as far artistically. They've been growing the style, and it was fun. I laughed my butt off. It's got a great message. I would say anybody who is in any way progressive thinking or in any way just wants to enjoy themselves, they should go see the Mime Troupe, which is not Silent Mime, by the way.
That's right.
Yeah, it was fun.
Jesse Moore, the guest. And let's go ahead and play another one now. This is off your brand new one, right?
Yeah, this is kind of what I'm doing now at these house concerts. This is a song off of... this is actually from another group. This is a cover. There are a couple of covers on this CD.
The CD is called Live at the Old Point. What is the Old Point's a club?
Yeah, the Old Point is like is in Algiers. Which is right across the river. You know, if you go out of the club and you walk up on the levee, you can see straight across to St. Louis Cathedral, to the French Quarter.
New Orleans is kind of like an island, isn't it? Because the river comes down and it snakes around
yep.
the city.
Yep. Yeah.
It snakes around, and if you look at New Orleans on a map, it's almost like it's an island, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And then you got Lake Pontchartrain's right in the middle of the whole thing.
Yeah.
And so across the river is still New Orleans proper, but it's different neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Now, Algiers didn't flood.
No, Algiers didn't flood much at all. I mean, they got touched a little bit, but not very much. They've got a really high levee there.
So a lot of the places are still intact.
Yeah, and the Old Point is real old New Orleans. It's really... I've been playing there every Sunday for 5 years.
Wow.
They gave me a big party, you know, 5 more years, they were calling it. And I'm always joking about the fact that there are so many characters there that playing there is like playing in the day room. And so what they did was they gave me a big party, and they got a picture of me with a straitjacket on. And then... Everybody came up dressed in like they were in an insane asylum. You know, some of them were doctors and some of them were just crazy people.
And that's not hard in New Orleans.
And it's not a big stretch for any of them. Trust me. and you know, we had a ball and I recorded it. So, you know, this is part of the...
This is your most recent release?
This is my most... In fact, it's not even really out yet in
really?
New Orleans. Not at all. When I get back, I'm going to do some TV and some things at the Louisiana Music Factory and some, you know, all kinds of stuff to kind of promote it.
Are you selling these off the bandstand?
I am, man.
So if people do make it to the house concert tonight, they can get a copy of this, right?
Yeah, you're right.
Here's Jesse Moore. What's the name of the tune we're going to hear?
This is an old Little Feat tune, man, that I love. It's called Fat Man in the Bathtub.
Fat man in the bathtub with a so sad and dejected, he put on his hat and started to run. Running down the street, yelling at the top of his lungs. All I want from this lifetime is summer good, clean, and fun. All I want from this life of mine is summer hit and run. I said, Juanita, my sweet Juanita, what are you up to, my Juanita? I said, Juanita, my sweet Akita, what are you up to, my Juanita? I don't want nobody who won't die for dimes. I don't want no speedballs, cause I might die trying. Love me a line, love me a dime, cause there's a fat man in the bathtub with the blues. I hear you moan, I hear you moan, I hear you moan, my Juanita.
Jesse Moore with Juanita. And he will be at a house party, a house concert tonight in Menlo Park. And you might be lucky enough to get there and to get in and get a seat. We'll give you a phone number and a name. It's kind of like one of these speakeasy deals, you know. And you
yeah, not twice.
Okay. And ask for Barry.
Yeah, ask for Barry. Not Harry. If you ask for Harry, you'll get shot. Ask for Barry. Okay.
Now, let's touch on that. It's a grim subject, but you live there, so I can't say you can. What's with the crime rate in New Orleans? Did it calm down? Did it get worse? Treme shows it as it's gotten worse. I've talked to Malik Rahim. What's going on with it?
It's pretty bad in the inner city. You know, there's some crime that spills out into the other areas. The tourists are, you know, so protected that you don't have to really worry about it. But the inner city is like any inner city in any place in the country. You know, there's a lot of poverty, and there are a lot of gangs and a lot of people shooting each other. You know, I myself feel that, you know, if you don't go looking for crack at 2 o'clock in the morning, there's a good chance you're not going to get shot.
Now, okay. In Treme, at the end of the second season, I'm not going to say who, what character, but one of the principal characters.
Yeah.
And I understand that, you know, show business and movies, they have to do stuff like that. They have to take a principal character and get them killed, you know. Yeah. And one of the principal characters who we all fell in love with and never even thought of getting killed got shot right in the face for telling a kid, hey, you don't want to rob me, man. What are you doing? You're stupid. Yeah. You don't take my guitar.
Yeah.
And the guy just shot him in the face.
Yeah.
Does stuff like that go on there?
It happens. I mean, it happens.
I mean, it happens here, too.
Yeah, it happens in New York. It happens in Detroit. It happens in Indianapolis.
But you lived there before, and now you live there after.
Yeah.
Did it change? Was it worse before? Is it different now, or is it the same?
I would say it's pretty much the same.
Is it?
You know, I live in the Upper Ninth Ward, and you know, the New Orleans Musicians Village is right in the middle of an area where there's a fair amount of crime. We've never experienced it in where we live, but close by, we've experienced it. There are people, you know, you have poverty, you have guns.
Yeah.
You have guns and drugs, you have people shooting each other.
Right. And frustration, too, because there was some quotes that came out from Bill Quigley. You know who Bill is.
Mm-hmm.
Bill was a journalist there. Now he's gone on to bigger things, but he keeps his finger on the pulse there.
Mm.
And the town changed color since Katrina in a major way.
Mm-hmm.
It was an African-American town primarily, and it isn't anymore.
Mm.
A lot of those people didn't get a chance to come back. Women got greatly affected by Katrina, and also children. Schools.
Yeah.
A large percentage of the schools are not back. The ones that are charter schools.
Yeah.
And
that is one of the things one of the positive things that's happened is that New Orleans has almost become... See, when you wipe out a city, you got a chance to figure out how to do it right, okay? Some things they still haven't gotten right.
Right, I was going to say, did they do that?
Education, though? They are becoming a model in the country.
Really?
They really are. They're getting grants like crazy.
Isn't it all charter schools, though?
Well, everybody gets a shot to go there. I mean, you know, everybody's getting they're rebuilding a lot of the old schools that have been that were destroyed. From what I've, you know, I don't have any kids, so yeah. I can't really say from a subjective point of view.
Mm-hmm.
But what people have told me is that if you work hard, you can get your kid into a decent school where they'll get a not only a good education, but a great education.
Now, what about at-risk youth who, say, don't have the parent support or, you know, the wherewithal? They're going to get left behind,
They're
right?
called at-risk for a reason.
And public schools, is there a place for them, for at-risk youth?
There is, and they're still rebuilding. I mean, those schools were absolutely destroyed.
Sure.
After Katrina,
right.
During Katrina, which, by the way, and I have to say this every single time that I ever mention Katrina to anyone in public, this was not a natural disaster.
Thank you.
This was not a natural disaster.
And go ahead and quantify and define that. What do you mean when you say that? I know what you mean, but I'd like you to tell the folks.
Well, you know, forever, the levees were, we were, you know, it's kind of like if you go out with a... People ask me now if the levees have been rebuilt and if they're, you know, they're up to par. And I say, if you go out with a girl and she cheats on you, are you going to go out with her again? Okay. If you do, then you know what you got. Okay. They're telling us that they've rebuilt these levees to the point, you know, where they're just about finished for a 100-year flood and all this kind of stuff. But they were telling us stuff like that before. They kept cutting the funding. They kept cutting the funding in D.C. They built substandard levees. They were just not capable of dealing with. You know, when Katrina came through, we were dancing in the streets. You know, everybody was happy because we had dodged another bullet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no, there was no damage. It came through, you know, it blew a few roofs off, stuff like that. But it wasn't, you know, the total destruction that we were warned about, you know, with a Category 5 coming through.
And you stayed in town? You didn't evacuate?
No, I left that night.
Okay.
I didn't even know that there was a hurricane coming, okay? I was living in mid-city, and on a whim, I decided to move into the French Quarter. And this was a couple of months before Katrina. And then 3 days before Katrina, everything was unplugged, and I moved everything into the French Quarter and put everything in the middle of the room, slept there, and then the next day I got up and went outside that was Sunday, the 28th, I went outside to get some coffee and noticed that there was nobody in the streets. So then I went down to Harry's Bar, and I saw Ray Nagin saying that there was a storm of unprecedented size and strength headed right to New Orleans and that you better get out of Dodge. So I got out that evening.
Where'd you go?
I just ambled around the country, man. And I actually had a...
Did you fly out or drive out?
I drove out. It usually takes about a half an hour for me to get to Slidell from the French Quarter. It took me 6 hours.
That's on the way north, right?
Yeah, it was. Well, that was east to get north.
Okay, you know? right. Towards Lafayette.
Yeah. And so I didn't even know that the storm was hitting. My place mid-city was under 8 feet of water for 3 weeks, and my place in the French Quarter was untouched. And
amazing.
I came back to a gig. I had angels working for me, man.
Wow.
But it's come back to the point now where I'm very happy with New Orleans, where it is. We've got new leadership now because, I tell you, man, Ray Nagin,
we
weren't really happy with that guy.
Yeah, anymore. From what we could see out here, and we couldn't see as much as you could, it didn't seem too good.
Some of the stuff he was saying, some of the things,
right.
You know, it was just ridiculous.
But the new mayor, Mitch Landrieu?
Yeah, he's a good guy, and he's a friend of the arts. As lieutenant governor, he was the one that set up this whole tax-based thing that allowed New Orleans to become a very major player in the film industry.
It became
you know, Hollywood South.
Well, let's get into a sore subject now. Charity Hospital.
They don't know what the hell they're doing with that place.
Well, haven't they already decided?
Aren't they
going to wipe out that neighborhood right next to it?
They were going to do that, and in fact, they wiped out an awful lot of it, and then they figured out, oh, we don't have the funding yet.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a big confused mess.
Now, in Spike Lee's latest account, if God is willing, the creek don't rise.
Yeah.
He interviewed a few residents from that neighborhood. That neighborhood is 150 years old. There are houses there 130 years old. This neighborhood was fine, and it didn't get flooded by Katrina. Charity Hospital, the largest hospital in New Orleans, probably in the South, had over 1,000 beds.
Yeah.
and was the primary health care, mental health care provider for the entire city. And they wanted to tear this down, and it, there was nothing wrong with it,
Nothing wrong with it.
And they never reopened it either.
It's still just sitting there.
It's empty.
It looks like the VA hospital is going to get built. It looks like that's going to happen, but they don't know. They wanted to build this whole massive corridor for LSU and Tulane, the whole just a gigantic modern facility. And I understand that. That's a cool thing to want to do, but to wipe out an entire historic neighborhood of people who really busted their butts to get back after Katrina and live through that. To just wipe that out, and then to say, well, Charity Hospital is just too old.
And Charity Hospital, we're talking like over 10 stories.
Oh, yeah, it's huge.
It's like 15 or 20.
Yeah. It's about, I would say, driving by it. I've never actually been in it, but because it's abandoned now.
Right.
But I would say it's maybe 15, 20 stories.
Yeah, it's massive. It can take like
buildings.
Yeah, it can take like Mark Morial, community activist who was in Treme too.
Right.
Said that if you were born between 1946 and 66, it was only one or two places you were born, at home or at charity.
Yeah.
And you know, more than three-quarters of people were born at Charity Hospital.
Yeah. James Booker died there.
Did he really?
Greatest piano player.
Probably James Black, too, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Talking to Jesse Moore. Well, anytime I get somebody from New Orleans in the house, I got to talk about all this stuff, not just the music. Man, you are sounding great, man.
Thank you.
You got a triple threat going on here. You're acting. You're a full-time actor. Well, full-time. You're an actor. You're a working actor.
Yeah.
You're a recording artist, and you're a hell of a performer, man. You must. How do you feel about yourself?
I feel. You know what I feel, man?
What?
Absolutely. I feel I'm happy. I got a good life, man.
You do.
I live in maybe the greatest city in the planet.
Yeah.
I've got great friends. I play music for a living. I make movies and TV shows for a living. I got friends that I can go out to California, to New York and Boston. I'm going to Costa Rica. I'm going to the Virgin Isles. You know, friends who are saying, come on over here and play some music for us, and we'll take care of everything, man. And I mean, well, come on, man.
Yeah, it don't get no better than that,
man,
does it?
Shoot.
You said you grew up in Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn, New York, man, born and bred.
Did you ever think in your wildest dreams when you were like in high school?
Yeah.
You know, that it would end up like this for you?
No idea whatsoever, man. I just, you know, I was...
And being African American from Brooklyn, you could have ended up in several different places.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we were talking about that on the way over here, man. Most of the guys I grew up with are either in prison or dead, man.
Yeah.
It's the truth. You know, and I'm living life.
Just briefly, how did that happen? Were you inspired for the acting in school?
No, I actually was a musician for, I was a musician for like 20 years before I became an actor.
Did that come from school or from home?
No, actually I learned how to sing in the boys' club bathroom, which had the best reverb. Best reverb in any
what
place.
Are we talking, doo-wop here?
Yeah, doo-wops, man. You know, I was like 10 years old, and I discovered that, you know, I wasn't a tough kid, and I was living in a really tough area. I was living in the projects. But I discovered that I was exempt from all that because I could sing. I was a singing kid.
They left you alone.
They left me alone, man. So, you know, I kept singing, and at 12 years old, I won the talent contest at the Brooklyn Apollo Theater. This was when I was 12.
There's two Apollo theaters?
Yeah, there were two Apollo theaters, yeah. And every show that went to the New York Apollo Theater, to the New York one, went to the Brooklyn one.
I never heard
about
this.
Oh, yeah, it's called the Brooklyn. It was on Fulton Street in New York and in Brooklyn.
Okay.
And I would, I would go to all these shows and do all this stuff, and then I did the talent contest. And for the talent contest, I won $25 and a record deal with Star Records, which was, you know, a storefront with a guy who could sell records.
Uh-huh.
And he got me some professional gigs doing background vocals for different groups, different recording artists. And then I started working with the guys at the Brill Building because I was doing demos for them.
Wow.
And so I would, you know, do, you know, because in those
that
days...
was Carole King, Neil Sedaka and
Lieber and Stoller and all those guys. And they would write these songs, and then I would do a demo, and then they would take it to the artist, and the artist would learn the song.
So it'd be you singing on the demos?
Yeah, it would be me singing on the demos.
And they'd just pay you little money for singing on the demos?
$50, you know, stuff like that. I was 12 years old, 13 years old.
Man.
You know, I was especially good at singing the chicks' parts. Because I had such, you know, I was a little kid. Yeah, I had the high voice. And when I was 15, I got a chance to audition for Smokey Robinson for Motown. And
how did that work out?
Well, it was a little, kind of heavy pressure. I walked into his dressing room in backstage at the Apollo Theater, And in the room was Eddie Kendricks from The Temptations and the bass singer from The Temptations, Melvin something or other, and Marvin Gaye, the guitar player for The Miracles, and somebody else. I forget who it
was. They were all there to hear you?
They were all there to hear me.
Oh, God.
So I went there, and Smokey comes in from the bathroom with a do-rag on his head and this bathrobe on, and he comes out, and he's washing his socks while he's listening to me in between shows. You know, and so I sing this song, you know, and he turns to me and he said, "It's real good, kid, but you sound too much like me, man." Yeah.
And so you didn't get the gig?
No, I didn't get the gig.
Oh, man.
But, well, you know, I got to sing for Marvin Gaye and Smokey Robinson. I was 15 years old, man. You know, it's like being in football camp with Joe Montana or something,
That's
you know?
That's amazing. That is amazing.
And see, this is what's funny to me is that as I'm doing these house concerts, people want to hear this stuff, and then they go, "Oh, okay, you can play a song." But, you know, they want to hear all these stories, man, and I'll tell them, you know, it's fine with me.
You might have found a new profession. Traveling troubadour.
Traveling troubadour, man.
Tell the Katrina story. Jesse Moore has been the guest for the hour. He's going to be playing at an undisclosed location. Dick Cheney will not be there.
Not twice, baby.
If you think you might want to try to get a seat, and there is a nominal cover charge, which we can't mention on the air, call Barry.
$250 per person.
Call Barry at 650-327-5493. That's Barry at 650-327-5493.
All guns will be checked at the door.
That's right. And keep your drugs in your pocket.
Right.
Jesse, I want to thank you so much.
It's my pleasure, man. I'm enjoying this.
And I'm going to see you tonight.
All right. Come on down, man.
Save me a seat.
Yeah, you're right.
What are we going to go out with?
This is a song that I wrote about a different kind of relationship that, you know, most of the blues is always about, "Oh, man, I lost you. I don't got it." Now, this is more like, it's like when I was a kid, I used to see Miles Mabley a lot. You know, I would do these shows.
At the Apollo.
Yeah. And she said, "You know, my husband died. They say you should say something good about the dead. He's dead. Good." You know? So this is about that kind of relationship. And then there's a little introduction there by my buddy Chip Wilson, who's sitting in on it with me there.
All right. Jesse, thank you so much. Stay in touch. And
my pleasure. See y'all tonight, man.
Definitely.
We're going to do a couple of tunes together here. This is my buddy Chip Wilson. Yo, guys! Thanks a lot, John. It's nice. I haven't been back here for quite a little while. It's great to be back. I just left a gig I've been doing for a matter of years. And so I really know what it's like to show up at the same place every Sunday and be with these people that you care about. So how about a nice hand for Jesse Moore, who's been here for 5 years.
Five years
with you, Muggs.
I love you. Thank you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's blues time at the Old Corn Bar. Such a sad, sad song. But those days are done now. I was in the sun now. Now that you're not my baby. Start to fuss and fight. Now my nights are sweet. Each day is a treat. Now that you're not my baby.
It felt like it took away my reason for living. I figured once again I'd wind up knocking on your door to start forgetting and forgiving. That little voice in my head said, are you crazy? Have you gone insane? All that woman ever gave you. Where your pretty little head used to lay. And I get to missing that good love. But then I shake myself and say, I got to move on now. I'm happy you're alone now. Now that you're not my baby. No. Blues, that chip.
Jesse Moore, live at the Old Point Bar in Algiers, New Orleans, Louisiana. This is KZSU Stanford.